From the Hill Country in Texas, broadcasting worldwide, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email Patrick at OneRadioNetwork.com. Here's your host, Patrick Timpone.
Well, good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Good morning. Oh, my goodness. Do you believe it's May 1? May 1? May 1st? May 1st? Adam Bergstrom's here on the first Monday of the month, and it happens to be on May 1. Isn't May 1st some kind of auspicious day, Adam Bergstrom? So what is May? Isn't there something to May 1st someday? I don't know.
Flagpole Day.
Flagpole? No, it's not Flagpole Day. You just made that up.
You know what? Tomorrow, May 2nd, is Nude Gardening Day.
Nude Gardening Day. Ah, okay.
Seriously.
Really?
What Facebook says. It must be true.
Well, it must be true. It's New Gardening Day. Well, that's where you go out, yes, and then you can prune your neighbor's begonias.
Exactly.
That sounds like fun. New Gardening Day. Well, we should do a special show on that for sure. I wonder if we could find a new gardener between here and tomorrow morning at 9 o'clock, you know.
I'm close. It's so warm. I'm wearing my red bathing suit on a Monday.
You're wearing your red. Really? I have actually a red sweatshirt on today. It's been cold here in Texas. Well, I mean, 50 degrees at night, which is kind of strange for May. What do you got a heat wave working? What's going on?
Yeah, something's going on. Huh? We've got a lot of wind. I think it's coming from the desert, and it's been really hot.
It's real. Oh, like that. The desert winds. So I guess Oprah and the movie stars, they're probably in, you know what, where are they in? Either Costa Rica or Hawaii or somewhere this time of the year, because that's where the weather is best or something. I'm not sure.
Or they have air conditioning.
Yeah, which is...
we don't have air conditioning here because you really don't need it.
So neither do we. You don't do AC. Well, not California. You don't need AC, do you?
Some places you do. You know, if you live up on top of Mount Whitney or something. But mm-hmm.
So what's?
Well, actually, there you need a heater.
What is the warmest it gets, kind of thing?
We can go over 100. In fact, the record of heat wave was in Goleta nearby in something like 1932. It supposedly got about 140, the hottest.
Really?
In the... Right. Yeah, hottest in the nation until Death Valley took over.
Really?
Some kind of special weather condition where the birds fell out of the sky.
Oh, yeah, well, you know.
But that's freaky.
They probably saw that on CNN when the birds fell out of the sky.
Probably.
Probably, yeah.
In fact, there's been some talk that they exaggerated that mm-hmm. so-called heat wave.
Are you from Palm? Are you anywhere near Palm Springs?
About 150 miles away, something like that, 200 miles.
Yeah, I've always wanted to go there and just to see where Frank Sinatra used to live. He had a big place in Palm Springs.
It's neat, yeah. What's neat is you go to Palm Springs, it's really hot, and then you take the Palms to Pines Highway up to the top of the mountain,
yeah.
And you're up in the snow.
Really?
Yeah, it's a really nice drive.
Uh-huh, uh-huh. You know, that's where that, of course, is you can see the FSLIC on your bank window, you know, the FSLIC, you know, on the door of the bank, that means Frank Sinatra lives in Southern California. People didn't know that. No, they thought it was some insurance. No, it's Frank Sinatra lives in Southern California.
He definitely had a nice pad. They still give tours of it.
Oh, do they really?
On YouTube.
No, on YouTube you can see a tour of Frank's place?
Yeah, of his place,
oh,
yeah.
Well, I want to just go for real, you know, and see. Did I ever tell you?
They even have that.
Yeah. Oh, did I ever tell you I had a real for real tour of President Johnson's house one time? By Lady Bird showed me around.
Wow.
Yeah, when we worked, let's see, I guess it was in 1883, the Johnson family still own KLBJ, which is where LBJ. Get it? Okay, KLBJ, Lyndon Baines Johnson. And we had a Christmas party at the ranch where the Johnsons lived, you know, the Texas White House. And it was very modest house. I mean, there wasn't really, I mean, you know, it wasn't, I mean, it was just a Texas ranch house. You know, it was nothing really fancy. He had a nice little spread there in Johnson City where they had some moo cows and stuff. And so we were having a party, and Lady Bird was there, and she had a great accent with Patrick. You know, just she had this deep Southern, Texas accent. And she asked me if I'd like to see, would you like to see Lyndon's bedroom? Kind of thing. And she took me in there by the hand and showed me around the house and brought me in the bedroom and showed me around and showed me pictures. And very sweet woman. She was really, really quite something. And so that's my claim to fame, as I got to see Lyndon's bedroom, you know. Probably not quite as much action as Frank's bedroom, but, you know, you never know. I mean, it's May 1st, 2017 with Adam Bergstrom. Adam Bergstrom's a raconteur. He's a man about town. He's in his red bathing suit, and I have my red sweatshirt on. And we talk about your health, your wealth, and your well-being, because it comes from all different kinds of perspective of yes, no, maybe, which is kind of the answer for anything, I guess, these days on planet Earth. I say that more and more, you know. When people ask me a question, you know, they say, I usually kind of say yes, no, maybe. It's kind of an interesting, that's the part of your book title, right? Chronobiotic Nutrition, Yes, No, Maybe. And your two websites are?
SolarTiming.com. That's the free one. You can go on and look around. We sell books there. Mm-hmm. And SunSyncNutrition.com. That's the $99 one-time sign-up. Where we have color recycling and a bunch of stuff. Just go, you can check it out and see for free to see what's going on.
Mm-hmm. Well, I have a cool little chronobiotic story for you, and shows you how amazing spirit is connected with this, with everything, right? It's all divine spirit on some level. I had a dream the other night, a dream experience, and I was just screaming and yelling at somebody and really like angry, you know, just, I mean, really going at him, right? And it was pretty cool. I mean, just doing it. And so I woke up and I said, man, that was, you know, I don't experience anger very much. I mean, in my life, I never did get angry much. And so I got up and went into the kitchen, thought I'd get a little drink of water there, maybe take a pee, and looked at the clock. And you know what time it was? It was 3:20 on my clock, and that is exactly 2 a.m., which is liver cleansing time on solar time, because I'm 20 minutes off regularly here at Dripping, right? I'm 20 minutes ahead, which I found on your site, SunSync Nutrition. You can put in your latitude and tell you exactly what your solar time is. But then, of course, 1 hour because of spring forward, we're daylight savings. So exactly at liver cleansing time, I did the anger thing and woke up. And then, I left out the best part, too. Before I even knew what time it was or anything, it was in the dark. And there was this pain right in my liver, right there, as I'm feeling it right now. Isn't that cool? I mean,
amazing.
Isn't that cool? It's just, I mean, it's like, whoa. You know, and I mentioned this, and this is pretty curious, which I never really thought, but okay. I mentioned this to my Ayurvedic doc. We talked over the weekend, and, you know, I thought, well, you know, maybe there needs to be a little liver work. I was kind of conjecturing with him, and, you know, I talk about these things with him. And he says, well, maybe. Yes, no, maybe. But he says, keep in mind that, you know, we've been dealing with working with too much acid in Patrick's tummy for what now, 2 years, as I have the great stomach reset going on, you know, following the great colon reset because of the things that I was taking for my stomach that I thought were great, right, that wasn't good. which was hydrochloric acid. You know, I did 2 years, almost every meal, of HCl caps. I was up to 5 caps a meal.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. So, you know, I just really damaged my stomach, and I didn't know because, well, anyway, so he said, when you do have acid, whether it be in the middle of the night or a little bit here and there, it tends to make one angry. So he was suggesting it works the other way too. You know what I'm saying? As above, so below. As below, you know, I could have just very well been getting rid of some anger that I've had, you know, not knowing it was, you know what I mean? Jelly bean?
Definitely.
Yeah.
We store anger. In fact, the real problem is repressed anger.
Yeah.
Once you get it out, and you don't have to take it out on a human being, it's like releasing pressure. In fact, the rage to live is a function of the liver, and courage is controlled rage where you use it for your energy.
Oh, that's where the word comes from.
Yep.
Courage. I like it. So
definitely related. So we need to love life, and we need to at the same time have a rage to live.
A rage to live, yeah.
Give us, because we get the love from the phosphorus, from the ATP reaction, but we also need the adrenaline. In fact, our adrenal glands are actually mostly on our skin. And General Electric knew this, a century ago. And it's been forgotten, and it was partially rediscovered in the 50s and then forgotten again. Like, people always picture their adrenal medulla as being a little spot in the center of your adrenal glands, and actually it's colonized every cell in the skin that has phenylalanine or tyrosine in it.
Your adrenal.
So we draw our energy directly from the skin.
Directly from the skin. Wow. So no matter I feel so really good sitting out in the sun every day for at least half an hour. And Doodle does the same thing. You know, she'll just lie flat on her side, right in the sun, right next to me. She does the same thing.
Yeah, that's why Dr. Cowan is absolutely right. We really need to get out in the sun because it is our energy source, at least an hour or two a day.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Even in the snow, if you're up in the Canadian wilderness or something during the winter.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the Arctic.
And on the skin, it's important, isn't it? On the skin.
It is. Mm-hmm. The skin, in fact, the more skin you expose to the sun, the better. Now, burning's another story. You can overdo it, of course, but if you gradually tan, then you get a wonderful tan. And usually the best light is going to be approaching sunset or sunrise, you know. I always wondered about them saying that, you can only get vitamin D at one time of day. Well, then how did the seals up in the Arctic get it, you know?
That's right.
Every day they go south really quick and go to the equator, and then they swim back so the Eskimos can get their vitamin D.
Probably not. Yeah,
I think
so
there's something wrong with that.
Yeah, well, didn't you send me one time, Anna Bergstrom, a chart? Was it you? I think you sent me a chart, and it had the different cities and how much little vitamin D level sun rays you get. And did you send me that, or did somebody else?
I did.
Yeah.
Yes,
yeah.
I did.
Yeah, you did. And it's amazing. I mean, I don't care where you are. You kind of get some. All you got to do is go outside.
Yep. Anybody can go on, I think it's called Willy Weather, something like that, find out what their D level is. It, tiny town, just pick one next to it, because you won't find Dripping Springs, but you will find Austin.
Yeah, well.
And it's pretty similar.
Mm-hmm. 888-663-6386. If you'd like to be on the show, Anna Bergstrom, his book still in hardback, you can get soft cover kind of thing. It is Yes, No, Maybe, Chronobiotic Nutrition. If you go on Amazon, somebody will probably try to sell it to you for $120. I wouldn't do that. You can probably find it less expensive somewhere.
$30 and no more, and you'll find it on Amazon.
Yeah, that's funny, boy. I think there must be a lot of people on Amazon, some of these things, old movies and stuff. Like every now and then I shop for some old videos that I like to put in my collection. And, you know, you'll see a video in there. It's just a movie you can get almost anywhere. And it'll say $50. And I think there's a lot of people that just click and order stuff, and they don't even look at the price, right? So that's how these people stay in business, I think. You know, oh.
I think there's a whole industry there. Yes, no, maybe. I've seen it for sale for $160.
Yeah, I know. I've seen it before too. Andrew Goss has some of his books too. You know, the secret, the real world of money, or the secret world of money, right? $150, $200. Really? Okay. That's great, man. And so, if you'd like to be on the show with Adam, 888-663-6386. Email patrick@oneradionetwork.com. Let's see. I was going to. I had something here, and I just lost it. Did you see it? It just flew that way out to the north. It'll come. It'll come back here too. Oh. So yes, if you want to do new gardening, that's the new gardening day is tomorrow, so you can get your vitamin D levels. Do you think folks, I mean, it was a big craze for a long time. I haven't seen it lately, so maybe it's just a fad, all this taking so much vitamin D every day, by mouth.
A lot of people, I think they overdo it, and particularly vitamin D, as it's made, is very limited. You can easily make your own vitamin D by sticking your food out in the sun for 20 minutes, almost any kind of food. You know, when the Italians were in New York, before the buildings started getting high-rise, they would hang their pasta, their spaghetti out the clothesline. And then, when they moved into apartment buildings, they hung them on the balcony. Well, they passed a law against it, and the health of the Italians went down considerably. This was in the news in the 1920s. So they realized they weren't getting the vitamin D into their pasta. Because you can get, if you want the vitamin D2, you put a non-animal product out in the sun, and if you want D3, put an animal product. That includes butter or eggs.
Yeah, my grandma, she used to make her own pasta, and she would actually didn't even use a machine. She would just cut it by hand, you know, these kind of like fettuccine width, just cut it by a knife and just come in, and real long guys, and just hang them over a broom handle kind of thing, and she'd put it out on the porch. Yeah, she'd put it out on the porch. I thought she was just doing it to dry it out. Maybe it was just tradition. That's where she got the vitamin D stuff, I guess.
Yeah, you know, it's funny that a lot of people, you'll see three generations, but there'll be the grandparents and there'll be the grand progeny, but the middle generation is missing. So people lived longer back then, as long as they didn't get cholera or something like that, scarlet fever or whatever.
Yeah.
But they actually lived longer because nutritionally they were better off at that time. Now, all our food is being manufactured, a lot of it with nanotechnology, too. Tony's right on that.
You think Tony's right on that? We had our other, Gary Hanna, who's making this Ormus particle thing, which is 3 million times smaller than nano, which is pretty amazing. He says the same thing, that this nano stuff is just not good. You see a lot of it out there when you, I know you do a great deal of research.
Yeah, it's even getting in the water. So anyone who takes nanoproducts, when they pee or poop into the system, it goes into the gray water, and that gets into the food. So a lot of people are eating, for instance, nano silver has its place, but nano silver every day is not a good idea. They're even using it in washing machines now. You wash your clothes, and it gets nano silverized.
Oh, so you think a little bit what you've seen is okay. Tony's pretty, you know, he gets hardcore about it, but you don't have any evidence that a little bit of nano silver is gonna make you turn into a cyborg or anything?
We have the ability to resist it. In fact, some things are naturally nanoized, like milk has a lot of nanoproducts in it naturally, and so does meat. Nature does it, but when you make tiny atoms of silver, of copper, of lead, whatever else they're using, then you get into trouble, you know.
So
organic products, pretty okay.
So Gary Hanna was suggesting that they're of a particle size where they actually get clogged up in this system. Do you think that that's something that is going on? Or maybe you could talk to us like a golden retriever and let us know what you think is the issue with the nanotechnology from what your research. Wait a minute, we should do this so we know exactly.
Maybe you could tell me what you think is going on.
That's right.
And please speak as you might to a young child.
That's me.
A golden retriever.
That's Doodle.
It wasn't brains that got me here, I can assure you of that.
All right, so maybe you could help us with that. What do you think is going on with this nano stuff? Do we know for sure?
Well, you know, a lot of supplement companies and drug companies advertise that they want to make things more absorbable.
Right, right.
But making it more absorbable, maybe the bodies are rejecting things. Like when people take iron, they only sometimes absorb about 3%. By actually enhancing that, it goes to different levels and actually toxifies the body. Now, if you look at a periodic table of the elements, it has 7 levels. All of those levels actually are the penetration levels of the human body.
The penetration.
So when you're at the 4th level across, if you look at one of those charts, you just get on the internet and see it, the 4th level is the cell. To go below that in the 5th level, you're in the organelles, including the nucleus of the cell. And below that, you get into the DNA. Above that, if you look at the 3rd level, you'll find sulfur there, by the way. That's why, as Sulfur Man points out, sulfur works on the lymphatic system, not in the cell. And it's clearly shown, if you look across the 3rd period, from sodium, magnesium, on into sulfur and phosphorus and all of those do not act always in the cell. Their natural home is in the 3rd level, which is in the lymphatics and the interstitial fluids, and even in the blood partially.
So could that be the reasoning why our sulfur helps people to detoxify, get rid of stuff, because it's working on the lymphatics?
It will clear your lymphatics out, yes. Now, it's what they call... what do they call it? Something to do, mini sulfur or whatever. Selenium works on the cellular level. If you want to clean inside the cell, you use that. But a lot of the dirt is already expelled into the lymphatic system, and that's kind of where we get rid of our garbage and circulate it, our sewer system.
Mm-hmm.
Of course, we absorb there, too. Both are going on. Much like our genitals are tied in with our sewer system also at the same time.
I beg your pardon.
So we can both build and, and get rid of things.
Uh-huh. So you can actually see the different levels of modality, if that's a good word, of different on the periodic table depending on what row it's on?
You bet. It shows what level in the body it works. Like the metazoic level is what the sodium sulfur level is. And in fact, when you want to work on high blood pressure, it occurs at that level only. So if you go and try to do it with potassium, it doesn't work as well as simply between sodium, which is number 12, and sulfur, which is number 16. You have magnesium sulfate is in that same level, so it will actually drop blood pressure, as they do in, as nurses know about in hospital medicine.
Okay, so I got the periodic table right here in front of me, thanks to Dr. Google. Boy, Dr. Google's smart. He's got everything.
He's really handy.
Really handy. So let's see, the periodic table level 3 is sodium, right?
Yep.
Sodium, magnesium. And then you skip all the way over to aluminum, silica, phosphorus, sulfur. Sulfur is
And chlorine. So
and then chlorine.
Sodium chloride, which you notice the sodium joins with the chloride, and in between is magnesium sulfate. So magnesium sulfate actually works to drop blood pressure.
Magnesium.
But it's in that same level. Now, potassium works with bromine.
That's
and chemicals like that.
That's the 4th level, potassium, right?
Yep.
That's
and calcium, though calcium is supposed to be external, it actually, its natural home is inside the cell.
Mm-hmm. So I wonder how these people that put these elements together figure this thing out. Man, this must be God-inspired or something. How would you know this stuff, man?
I was never taught this in chemistry class. I actually got a D in chemistry.
Oh, me too.
Because a lot of it didn't make sense to me. But then when I started studying the works of Emmanuel Ravisi, he figured all this out. And the mathematics actually fits that when you add up the electron numbers, you get your acidic elements tend to be in the odd numbers, and your acid ones, excuse me, the other way around. Your odd numbers tend to be acid, and your even numbers are alkaline.
What do you mean? Give us an
and
example
no one
of
showed
that.
Me that.
Give us an example of that. So,
well, in fact, the anabolic elements are lithium, sodium, potassium, rubidium, and cesium. And they're in the first row going down. Now we're talking vertical.
I see them, yeah. Lithium, lithium, sodium, potassium, rubidium, cesium, and FR. What is that?
And francium.
Francium, whatever that is, man. I remember St. Francium, right? Remember him? Yeah, I used to have a holy card of St. Francium. He was cool.
That's right.
So the first column down, what is that?
That's anabolic or acid-forming.
Acid-forming.
You can make acids and alkalines out of them, but they tend to turn the body either acid or alkaline, and that row are all anabolic. They build. The one next to it, which is beryllium, magnesium, calcium, strontium, barium, and radon.
Radon.
Those tend to break you down. And breaking down is a necessary thing. It's called catabolism, where you have to kill cells so you can rejuvenate other cells. We rotate our cells.
I'm glad about that.
And other parts of bodies, too. But you can actually tell where your cancer is coming from by looking at this chart, because cancer that has anything to do with the genes is going to be carcinogenic. It's going to come from the fourth level, at least, the cellular level. If you have a sarcoma, it's going to be from the third period. And if you have lymphomas or lymphatics, it's coming higher up, which means that it's easier to penetrate. So you're more prone to leukemia and diseases like that from external radiation. If you have a carcinoma, it's pretty well something you've eaten over a period of time, or you have inherited from your parents for what they ate. But if you get it as a leukemia, usually it's going to be some kind of external assault from the environment. And those are getting more and more common because our environment is getting more and more toxic.
Pretty fascinating, boy. Looking at this little table there. That's pretty. So let's see. So you said this first column tend to be more acidic on the body, acid-forming. So like potassium, supposedly a banana has lots of potassium. That would be more acid-forming on the body?
Actually,
no? It doesn't work like that.
More, a banana is actually more alkaline because it actually has the other ingredients that tend to make it alkaline. Most of your fruit is alkaline, so it actually is not good for building. It's more designed for clinging. It's like biological Clorox is what Swami Nitty Gritty used to call it.
Biological Clorox, really.
Yep. So it cleans you out. Now, fruit, the big secret is that you can make food out of sugars as long as you don't have polyunsaturated fatty acids getting in the way. So if you're going to be a vegan, you can be one, but you have to really know what fruits are and fruto-vegetables. When a plant offers us a fruit and we eat its leaves, it's like us offering someone food in our hand, and they eat our hand.
Oh.
Now, we can if we cook the hand, but if you don't cook the hand, a lot of the leaves and kale and all those type of vegetables, lettuce, etc., they actually have a certain degree of toxicity because the plant is defending itself. Many of the so-called antioxidants we talk about are actually poisons that the plant will defend with.
Yeah. You know, it's funny because, of course, Italians have... they've always eaten their share of salads, right? But like my grandma, for example, she would use lettuce and what's the other one? Endive and things like that as a vegetable and cook them with a little bit of olive oil. Lettuce, it's really good. I don't know if you ever cook lettuce, but I do it all the time.
You put pretty much denature the toxins by doing that. So it evolves the endive into a fruit. Because once you particularly dextrinize it, you've sugarized it. It is now a high-octane fuel.
Oh, no wonder she did that. See, she knew what she was doing.
fruit cooks itself. It's been cooked by the sun. It's as ripe as it's going to get.
Yeah,
if you cook it, you're not going to make it much riper, with the exception of an apple or something like that, which your best apples for your skin are actually the ones that start to ciderize, kind of the Safeway bargain apples, you know.
Really?
But they're still really delicious, and they're good for you. It ciderizes it.
Well, it's pretty cool. The periodic table of elements. I found a great one here. It's got different colors and stuff. And like Adam, you and I probably have always, you listening, have probably always seen this, and you probably saw it in chemistry class, but, you know, nobody paid attention at that point. I mean, you would have been a great chemistry teacher. You could teach all of this stuff, man. Kids would be interested then, wouldn't they?
They would.
They would,
because
yeah.
It was very boring the way I took it. That's why I got a D, and I almost flunked.
Of course, you did learn how to cut up a, you know, pickled frog, which is really very helpful.
You know, we never got.
You never did that? Oh, man.
And having a tendency toward vegetarianism, I think I would have flunked.
Oh, man. I don't know what they soaked him in, but it was the worst smelling stuff. Formaldehyde, right? It was like, oh, man. Dead frogs.
Somehow I escaped that.
Oh, you escaped that one. Okay. Let's do a little break here. And we got somebody on hold. So we're going to have fun this morning, as we always do with Adam Bergstrom. Two websites, solartiming.com, which is a freebie, and it's a cool thing. And then also sunsinknutrition.com, which is a $99 for the rest of your life. Hello? $99 forever? It's like the forever stamps at the post office. Of course, Adam will probably live longer than the post office, but that's another story.
In this country, the sulfur levels have been dropping. There was an alarm that went out to the Congress, and this was in 1932 or 34 when this big warning came out. Mineral quantities have been dropping in the U.S. for quite a while, and especially as farmland got worn out. Notable of things was the sulfur, and if you had been eating high sulfur foods all of your life, you may be getting enough sulfur, but we're not. And the sulfur content in foods is way low. And really, you need sulfur. The number one thing that sulfur does is it detoxifies the cells.
Thank you, George. George Altgelt on a previous show. He's a biologist, chemist, and knows a lot about agriculture. The number one thing, he says, is sulfur detoxifies the cells. This is pure sulfur. Very few of them are. Three prices, three locations, United States, Canada, and worldwide. Click an order, see the ad right-hand side on OneRadioNetwork.com. Isn't that funny? That's just what Adam Bergstrom just said. He said the sulfur guy talking about the thing. How serendipitous. We love sulfur. It is a great product. Ours is pure, probably purer than Ivory soap. Well, probably. I've seen the certificate of analysis, the latest one. They get one with every batch. 99.97, something like that. Just a pure thing, the real deal. Now be aware, or be square, that virtually every MSM, also known as sulfur, out there on the interweb, invented by Al Gore 2 weeks before he invented global warming, is kind of infiltrated with little sneaky things like whatever. Yeah, they do it. One of the biggest ones, and we won't mention any names in the world, they have adjuvants, they have tagalongs, they have things that make it less effective because some beaker boy somewhere told them they needed to do that. I don't know why they do it, but they do it. So ours is pure, and it's great. And some people call it organic. We've called it organic. Patrick calls it organic. I don't know if it's really organic because I don't know if you can really even classifies a mineral as organic, but I guess you can if it's not been sprayed. Who knows? It's pure sulfur, and my name is Wes, and it's not my mess. Previously with Stephen Huer, and why the uniqueness of One World Way delivers exceptional benefits.
A non-denatured, truly pure, truly raw whey protein will only help to raise glutathione. And when you raise glutathione, you have to remember every cell of the body, your pancreas, your liver, brain, all are dependent upon 10% of the protein content in every cell being glutathione. and makes that cell detoxify itself of heavy metals, chemicals, and whatever drugs. And then that makes the cell healthy. And one of the reasons that you have chronic disease is because the cells of the different organs and bodies are producing too little glutathione. They're succumbing to the free radicals. They're succumbing to the toxins, damaging the function of that organ. And that's one of the reasons why One World Way is so profoundly therapeutically powerful, because every cell and every organ depends upon high levels of glutathione. This is the number one food to fuel it over long periods of time, is glutathione production.
One World Way offers four very, very good tasting flavors: chocolate, vanilla, strawberry, and unsweetened, unflavored. Click and order One World Way right now on OneRadioNetwork.com.
Broadcasting live, weekday mornings, this is listener-supported One Radio Network.
The good times are coming. They'll be coming real soon. And I'm not just pitching pennies at the moon. I'm not about to come unhinged when everything goes wrong.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
Ah, we love Mama Cass. Good times are coming, Mama Cass. I don't know what year that was. What a great song. Yeah. What a lovely voice she had, right, man? Well, we're going to take your call on hold here. Stay right there. But I just wanted to mention, years ago, Dr. David Jubb. Remember David Jubb, Doc? Adam, he was on the show a lot.
I sure do.
He's really quite an interesting fellow. Microspecist, a blood formation specialist, New York University. Pretty smart cookie. He had mentioned his theory and that we were really more frugivores than anything. You know, if you had to pin us down to one thing that we do best with botanical fruits, which we, you know, it's a lot of stuff, you know, anything with a flower is a botanical fruit, right? So that would be, gosh, name me some: tomatoes, squash,
cucumbers,
peppers, what else? Okra. And then, of course, all fruits, of course, all have a flower. You know, all the fruits we know, like pears and apples. Apples don't have a flower, do they? I mean, I'm sorry, bananas don't have a flower. Maybe they're not a fruit. They must. Maybe they do. Maybe they do have a flower.
I think they do. They're definitely a fruit.
So agave, right, that has a flower. That would be, yep. would that be a fruit? Or that's actually a bromeliad.
Cactus pear. Now, that is a fruit. And dragon fruit. That also comes from an agave.
Yeah, yeah. So, but he did mention that buckwheat is actually a fruit. Did you know that?
That I didn't know. That
I know. It's really. So, and I've been eating buckwheat cereal. You can get an organic one at the hippie food store. And it's kind of like the old days when we used to eat cream of wheat. Remember that? You know, with butter and salt or olive oil. We used to have it with olive oil. Of course, we were Italian. We had everything with olive oil. And I've been eating some of that, especially like at liver time at 2 o'clock in the morning. It's really great to have a little buckwheat cereal. You get up and write on your book and have some cereal, and you know, it's kind of fun. And so if you do have a hard time with grains for whatever reason, you might consider getting some buckwheat cereal. It's actually a fruit. It's not a grain, and it sure tastes like a grain to me. I mean, it's as close thing you get to a cream of wheat. Do you remember cream of wheat? when you were kids?
I sure do.
Man, was that good, huh?
I ate it back in the day, cream of rice and cream of wheat.
Man, we ate a lot of, because in the morning in St. Louis, when it was snowing, you had to go to school, my mom would make cream of wheat or oatmeal, and we had some toast with real butter and maybe some, you would even put peanut butter on it or jelly, and what else did she? She would just feed us as much as we would eat, you know, before we went out the door. Here, eat this, you know, it'll keep you warm. Mom, I'm hungry. No, let's eat this, you know. what is it about moms and wanting their kids to eat? You know, it's just, I think it's in their genes, right?
It is.
Yeah. Let's take this.
And below that.
And below
because
that.
When you look at genes, they're just an intermediate step between the atomic level and the gross physical level,
okay,
the field level.
I'm gonna write that down because I want you to talk to us like we're a golden retriever. I want to understand more of the difference between genes, DNA, and health and stuff. And you're gonna even though I didn't ask you to prep for this, you're gonna tell us. And if you don't know, he'll just say, "I don't know." Okay, on the phone, who's this? Good morning. Good morning.
Hi, Patrick. Hi, Adam.
Hi. Who's
Hello?
This? Who's this?
Hi, this is Mary. Can you hear me?
We can hear you, Mary. Speak up a little bit. Where do you live? You must live far away. Are you in China or Bangkok or Timbuktu?
No, I'm in New York, Patrick. I'm in New York. I'm going to turn up my volume is up now. Can you hear me better?
Well, you're fine. You know, what's going on there, Mary, in New York?
I have a question for the both of you gentlemen.
Oh, boy.
I just happened to stumble upon my first Flat Earth video.
Your first
and
what, dear?
Of course, I always thought that was absurd. But I did some investigating and cannot find any real photos of the Earth from space.
Oh, flat Earth.
I
didn't.
Excuse
me. I didn't understand
flat Earth.
Flat Earth. Oh, my goodness. You're really going to. We're going to go there? Okay. So, what's your.
So, I just wondered what you guys thought about that.
Mm. Well, okay. My name is Wes, and it's not my mess. So, Adam, take it.
I'm with Sharon. You can see the round shadow of the Earth on the moon.
Yes.
Mary, from outer space. You had a really good guest on who explained that really well about a month ago. What was his name? When I think of his show, maybe I'll post that information on Facebook for people because he was a really good guest you had.
Sharon, maybe will, and they'll email me. So, Mary, the argument, what Sharon came up with, and Adam, and I, if you look at, have you ever seen the moon, right? So, if you look at the moon and you see that little half moon and those lovely little moon things, you know, the shape?
Right,
That is the sun shining on the moon with the Earth in front of it. And if that's not round, well, color me purple.
But now, why do you think no photos of the Earth from outer space, if we've been to the moon?
Well, I don't think there is photos, though. Isn't there the beautiful? Oh, but somebody said that may be photoshopped. Is that beautiful?
Yeah, that's only a composite that NASA has admitted to. It's just a composite photo.
Well, I'm sure there's.
It's computer generated.
I'm sure the beaker. Well, maybe they didn't go to the moon. I mean, that's a possibility. I mean.
Yeah, I just wanted to get the take that you guys had on it. It's so interesting.
Well,
but thank you.
Okay, thanks a lot. Are there any like real actual photos from space? I'm sure the boys, if they went up there, well, even if they didn't go to the moon, they still could have taken a shot of the Earth, right?
They're in satellites. Yeah, they do it regularly. In
do
fact,
they?
You can actually see it in live action on the NASA site.
Well, see? Okay, Mary. So what you do is you go Google NASA, right? We'll do NASA for you. NASA Houston, right? Is that it? Yeah. Is that where NASA is in Houston?
Their main place, I think, is in Houston. They have other
Here's
places,
the Space
too.
Center of Houston, and they probably have a whole link here. Did we really go to the moon?
This is Houston. Say again, please.
Houston, we have a problem.
Yeah, I know. We do have a problem. So there's the Houston Space Center, and you might be able to find some photos there. Google around, and who knows? See,
not that NASA doesn't stretch the suit.
No.
Truth, by the way, I got in trouble down there. When I toured there, they had astronauts and scientists talking about polynuclear hydrocarbons. that they were going to go to Mars because there was proof there was life there. Mm-hmm. And I pointed out on the microphone when I talked to them that polynuclear hydrocarbons are floating around everywhere in space, and they attacked me. In fact, I was surprised. So I thought, well, maybe I'm wrong. I went immediately to the University of Houston there, of Texas in Houston, mm-hmm. and looked up multiple books about the fact that they were every place. Then I found out that Clinton at the time wanted to get money so that he could go to Mars, not personally, of course.
Yeah, well, he probably should have.
But
done.
Anyway,
yeah.
it was a way to get to delude the public. So they're not beyond lying about things.
No, not at all. Matter of fact, they're mostly they don't tell the truth. I mean, they, whoever they are, Doug and Mel. You know, Doug and Mel, they do have a, whatever. So what do you think about? I think the first time I heard it, maybe years ago, was from David Wolf, who suggested that. You really can't go through the Van Allen belt, you know, because you would just burn to a crispy critter. So the whole moon thing was just a big hoax. And then, of course, people conjecture that, the late director, the cool guy, Eyes Wide Shut, 2001 Space Odyssey, what's his name? No, I mean, yeah, whatever.
Yeah, I know yeah, you yeah, mean.
It'll come. It's just circling the runway right now. It'll come in. He people suggested he produced the whole thing, you know, because he was kind of if you saw Eyes Wide Shut, he was in on The Boys. I don't know if you ever seen that movie. It's kind of weird movie, but he was, he knew what The Boys were up to. So
back then he's actually the man who invented the idea of the geocentric satellite, where it doesn't move. It can actually remain stationary above a place. It has to be 23,000 miles out. So we've had those out for quite some time.
Right.
He never patented that, otherwise he would have been a multimillionaire. And here's the weird thing. He moved and retired and finally went on his cosmic vacation in Ceylon. Well, those satellites ultimately do move, and they all end up over Ceylon.
Really?
No one really, they have all kinds of theories, magnetics, this and that, but no one really knows. But isn't it interesting that they would go over where he lived?
Yeah, well, there's something up with that one. Stanley Kubrick is who we're thinking of. It just came in.
Boop. That's his name.
Stanley. And he was quite an interesting director, of course. He did some of the classics, some of the classic movies, you know.
Famous for his third, what do you call it, the shot where you keep the camera rolling.
Yeah. Which they do a lot now, where you just kind of, there's a name for that too, where you just kind of keep it going and they'll just, you know, go down the hallway and stuff like that. And wow. Well, so I was going to ask, and I just got, my mind just took me places I didn't want to go, so I'm not going, that mind, it's pesky. You got to be careful of it. It'll just. So, do you think there's anything? Have you ever done any research on the whole Van Allen belt thing that you would turn into a crispy critter if you crossed over it?
Actually, it's easy to get through,
okay.
But not without slight damage. They figured when they went to the moon, they figured out the thinnest place to go through it, because I think it's the widest. It's about 200 miles or something. Mm-hmm. So they figured out another way to do it. Now, a lot of the people who ended up at the moon, radiation is a problem. So they died earlier because of that. And the astronauts, you know, they also haven't figured a way to rebuild their calcium after they lose it when they've been out there for about a year. Ultimately, though, think of the first fish that walked out of water, you know. That was like a totally alien environment. So we'll adapt to it, because I think eventually we're going to have to leave this planet. Because it's going to fall into the sun one day.
The only thing that got me about the moon thing is that, I don't know, if you look at those pictures, those little spacesuits that they wore back in 1969, they were just they looked like they could have bought them at pennies, you know? It's like, I don't know. Plus, you know, you don't see any, wouldn't you see some gas or something, carbon dioxide or something coming off of their thing? Body?
No, and actually, it's been pointed out by, in the name of this guy, I do not remember. He wrote seven steps to getting out of the getting out of the solar system, something like that. And he pointed out that you don't even need a spacesuit in space. When
really?
You see a person fall out the door and they blow up, that's totally fictional. Our bodies are spacesuits in themselves. Only you don't have any air, so that's not going to go. And the idea that your blood is going to boil as soon as you get out of the space hatch is not true. Now, you will die. There's no doubt about that. But what you do need, some kind of a thin titanium suit and not these big bulky things they wear, is because meteorites are coming at you like at the speed of a speeding bullet. And they're little tiny ones. But imagine something much smaller than a bullet that hits you at like 150,000 miles an hour,
mm-hmm.
It's not good for your health.
Yeah, but
and even now, there's some danger. You can get hit by the garbage we've left out there that's spinning at different
rates.
A lot of stuff floating around, for sure.
We've
got lots.
I was always curious, though, how they... If Armstrong was climbing down the ladder, right, who took the shot? And he didn't have a camera in his hand when he got there, best of my knowledge. Who took the shot of the little foot landing on the moon that they've got? Who took that shot?
That's a good question. They had lots of automatic cameras working, and a lot of that is
not before they got out and set them up.
No. And I don't know what photo that is, but that would obviously be fake.
Well, you've seen the shot. You can actually see his leg moving down and stepping on the thing. I mean, I think we saw it live with Walter Cronkite in 69. I remember watching it.
That could be external, though. They had external cameras all over the place. They brought plenty of cameras along.
No, you're not hearing me, though. He's walking down for the first time, right? This is the first time the lunar thing landed at him, and he's walking down the ladder. But they got a shot of this foot thing going. Maybe they cut that in and actually taped that in the studio, and just wanted to do that for, and they still
sometimes
really want
they
to.
Do for
you know what I'm saying?
Purposes.
You know, yeah.
Or someone could have gone down already and said, "Here he comes down the first," and that could be done.
Yeah.
The so-called flag waving, all of that not waving, that was. That was all explained in various videos.
Yeah.
I personally believe that JFK was telling the truth about us going to the moon, and I think we have had the capabilities to do a lot more, but they don't want us to do that. And only if the Russians and the Chinese space programs get a lot better than they are now will we have any need to go up there. But people are not realizing that if we don't get up there, the future of humanity is going down the tube. There won't be any more Earth because it's going into the sun. However, I remember the joke about the student that runs up to the teacher and said, "How long did you say till the Earth was going to fall into the sun?" And the teacher says, 100,000 years. "Oh, thank God. I thought you said 50,000 years.
That's right. Thank you. I really got to worry. If you're a film buff like Adam and I are, and Vibrant Gal, Eyes Wide Shut was his latest. Full Metal Jacket, Stanley Kubrick, great movie. The Shining, Barry Lyndon, Clockwork Orange, 2001 Space Odyssey, Dr. Strangelove, or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, Lolita, Spartacus. Wow, he had some movies, didn't he? Path of Glory, The Killing, Day and Night. Really pretty amazing director. What a filmography thing he had. Barry Lyndon, yeah, Clockwork Orange. I think I've ever got all the way through Clockwork Orange. I've tried it several times, and it's just so wacko, I couldn't even do it. It's like, no, I can't even do this one.
I watched it a long time ago.
Oh, man. It's like, you better be on Prozac or something, man. Oh, God. Okay.
Who did A Lucky Man? Was that him? That was an amazing movie.
A Lucky Man? Well, no, I don't know.
A Lucky Man.
Was that him?
Holy cow.
What's the name of the movie?
Oh, Lucky Man. It had Malcolm McDonald in it, but I don't know if Kubrick did it, but it's an amazing movie. It's
really?
A long one.
Really? I'll have to watch that. So I'll put that on my Netflix queue. Is it really good?
It's a trip. I enjoyed it, but it's like every time he escapes the situation, it gets in a worse jam.
Oh, so I'm going to watch that.
Pretty humorous.
Directed by Lindsay Anderson, writers David Sherwin and Malcolm McDowell, based on the original idea by Malcolm McDowell. Oh.
Yeah.
Lucky man.
Oh, lucky man it is. Okay.
Oh, lucky man. I'll put that in my next Netflix queue. Oh, lucky man. All right.
I saw it in the movie theater back when I was a hippie.
You're still a hippie, man.
I don't have any hair, so I can't qualify anymore.
That's right. Good morning on the phone. Who's this?
Hello. Good morning.
Good morning.
Nancy in Nebraska. Good morning, Patrick. Good morning, Adam.
Hi, Nance. What's happening,
girl? Good morning.
Well, I just got a couple questions. Lately, my left leg, at night when I go to bed, I'll have like this pain that kind of runs down my leg, kind of like in the middle, and I've been waking up with my left hand like numb. I have to just keep moving it to get the circulation in there. Any ideas on what that is?
Male trauma.
What? Male?
Mm-hmm.
Male trauma. When you think of that pain going down your leg, what's the first color that comes into your mind when you think of the pain or the inconvenience?
Quick.
I don't really have a color. I'm wearing red because y'all are wearing red. I'm looking at the red, but I know I was reading all that. I watched your video the other day on all the colors and stuff.
Yeah, no, not that. So why don't you just close your eyes for a second, okay? Close your eyes and think about the pain and don't think about anything and what color. One color will come up. Just do it. First color.
Oh, maybe orange?
Okay, well, that's good.
That could actually be something with the female hormones. And it could be the uterus, something like that. Pains are usually reflexes from other areas. What part of your hand is the pain?
It's not so much a pain. It's just my whole hand. It's numb. It's if I just slept on it the whole time, and then it gets numb.
Pins and needles.
Kind of pins and needles.
It's not needles. What? I don't have needles.
Mm-hmm.
What part of the hand? Toward the pinky finger, the index, the thumb?
It's like my whole hand.
The whole thing, huh?
The entire
hand. Open and close it, and open and close it, and move, my wrist around, and just to try to get that circulation back in there.
Okay. Without a color and a way of body dowsing, I'd have to guess at that, but one way you could bring the circulation back in there is by actually massaging into the armpit. If you go into the armpit, you'll notice that you can find places that kind of zing into the fingers when you find those reflexes. Also, the very back of the neck, the bottom cervicals, and some of the upper thoracic connect in that. So sometimes a simple chiropractic adjustment can actually, or osteopathic adjustment can actually free that up. But more likely, there's a trauma associated with it. And with it, with the color orange, it usually has something to do with reproduction and the hormone system. And the leg, is it down the front of the leg? You say the middle of the leg, you mean right down the front?
Kind of like inside in the middle of it.
Oh, inside. Isn't that is that gallbladder inside? Let's see.
Well, there's about six meridians that run down there and have relations, including the stomach down the front. So it kind of depends how deep it is. The meridians usually are shallower, but they have deeper, some points go in, you have to go an inch to get there, and some are right at the surface. So without knowing exactly front or back, the only way you could really tell that would be body dowsing, then that would reveal it instantly. And anybody can either see the video that I have about turning the feet and learn by themselves, or they can get my $9.99 book with instructions how to do it. The only thing with the book is you have to practice it. I've got it all lined up of what to do, and you need two people to do it. You need someone to turn your feet. You learn it, then you teach someone else. And it's really easy to teach someone in person. A little harder, you have to kind of follow instructions. The people who can, like, put together a bicycle or something like that when they get it from Walmart can do really well with the book. People that don't follow instructions might have a little trouble with it. But remember, I found body dowsing technique out myself by accident, by working on a buddy of mine who was a tennis player. He mentioned a woman's name, and his right foot jumped. And I remember thinking, could it be this easy? And so I asked him to repeat what he said. He mentioned the woman's name, and his right foot jumped, and my entire approach to body language changed that day.
Huh. Is that with the toes? Wiggle, massage the toes, or no?
Well, you actually turn the feet in a figure eight, each one with a figure eight, and then you ask the person questions. And you'll find out who's the matter with you, because every type of problem we either have a male or a female. An it happens so rarely. I found two its in my entire life. Like, if we have a trauma with a person, we might be mad at her ex-husband for years or her ex-wife for years. But very few people who fall down a stoop, 20 years later, they're saying, I'm going to get even with that second stair on that stoop for tripping me. I'm going to get it no matter what. But I've seen people traumatized by an ex-wife or an ex-spouse for like 50 years later.
What about
and that's where we get. Oh, that can do it, yeah. You know, I had a lady who was a client of mine, and I would go over and see her weekly. So I would just touch her feet, turn them once or twice, and say, what's going on with your husband? She said, how do you know that? And then another week I'd come by and say, what's going on with your boss? She had a female boss. And she said, how can you tell that? And I said, you can't change their attitude necessarily, though sometimes when we change our own, they do change. But you can't change yours. So after I showed her some techniques, yawning, stretching, et cetera, color, recycling, then it would take me 20 minutes to find out if it was her female boss or her husband that was bugging her. But before, she was being so traumatized that I could tell easily, and that meant the proprioception in her muscle, which means her hitting doors, having accidents, things like that, is out. The kinesis is out. It gets weakened. So her muscular was much stronger by just having the defense, the ways of defending against her husband and her boss, and sometimes their attitude will be changed when our attitude changes. That happens a lot.
Do you try to change your husband, Nancy? Oh, she laughs.
I'm just trying to get him to see the light sometimes.
Well, okay.
Now, I don't recommend that, because I've changed wives 5 times and it doesn't work, because you keep meeting the same woman.
I changed them out 5 times, and I tell you what, it doesn't work.
I finally got over my traumas and decided I wasn't going to be in any relationship anymore. Then I met Vibrant Gal. But until I gave up the whole process, then I met her.
Yeah.
And she's laughing now. She's doing yoga, so I get to watch her butt when she does the plow.
Well, Nance, I hope that's helpful. I don't know. They're probably more confused, but, you know, something to think about.
No, it does help.
Okay,
so,
well.
Without knowing what it is, though, yawn and stretch, do the color recycling, you know, where you go through black, mm-hmm. gray, brown, red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, violet, and white. Automatically, you will start to clear yourself of that trauma, and then you don't have to know who's the matter with you, because the who will come up. It will come from the subconscious into the conscious, and you'll know exactly who's bugging you and why your leg is numb and why your hand is numb. And it is the left, so I can guarantee it's going to be a male trauma.
Okay. And then with the color thing, because I was reading that last night, I found something on the Internet. It's really long, and I'm going to forward that on to a friend in Texas. But when you say those colors, so do you just say the colors, just go down that list, or do you visualize those colors while you're saying
visualizing them is best, but you can say them because the word is connected to the color already. In fact, color itself does not traumatize us. Our identification by naming the color is what causes the trauma, because there's really 10,000 colors that an average human being can see, 10,000. Why do we tend to name them only 7 or 8 colors? In fact, the more primitive the civilization, the less colors they have. There are civilizations that only have black and white. Then red is the next color they pick. Then they go to yellow. Then they go to green. They skip orange. They pick 7 colors. This is well documented even by Spengler, the historian, years ago, and E.O. Wilson, the author, the ant guy. He writes about it extensively, and you'll find it, that primitive civilizations, like the Greeks didn't have a word for blue. They said, look at the crimson ocean. What the heck is a crimson ocean? They couldn't see a blue, scientists have realized now. Or they couldn't identify it. They made no distinction between crimson and blue. But we do, and because of it, you can't have a trauma without identifying it with a color. So when you put it in flow, you automatically clear yourself of the trauma. Each level, like red is a moving trauma, orange has to do with sex, yellow has to do with decision, green has to do with resentment, blue has to do with disillusionment, like the blues, indigo with a problem with an authority figure, as does purple, and violet with the so-called spiritual or religious trauma, and so on. Gold with self-hate, silver with silver-tongued devil trauma, white with completion or ethics. Each one has a color attached to it. On my One Radio Network blogs, I've written about this extensively, by the way. Use that search function that Patrick's got there. It's really great.
Oh, yeah. So let's see. I wonder what we'd put in. Just Adam Bergstrom colors, maybe, in our search on One Radio Network and see what the...
Yep, or put in individual colors. I tell you, Patrick, sometimes I forget things and I go and look it up now on your
It works pretty good, doesn't it? It works pretty good.
Oh, it works great. Yeah. You really got it fine-tuned.
Yeah, that's good.
Okay.
Okay, Nance.
Okay. Well, I do that color thing you have on your sun sinks, you know, in the bathroom in the dark and go through all those colors, that's cool.
Oh, cool. So remember.
Yes, then you can watch it, and it goes through, so you can just relax into it. And particularly if you have a widescreen TV you can hook up like we do to our computers, we can sit back and watch that thing in large.
That's cool. So, Nance, remember what Adam has taught us. If you're a girl, it's always about a boy. And if you're a boy, it's always about a girl. So, I mean, it's just it's a planet Earth thing.
Okay.
All right. See you soon.
No, thank you.
Bye.
Thank you.
Hey, you guys, you dudes, we recently talked to Daniel Vitalis about testosterone.
So many men today are reaching an age where they begin something we call andropause, and this is the equivalent, male equivalent of menopause. So we know women go through menopause, but less understood in the mainstream is the idea that men go through andropause. And so they hit a certain age, but men start to really drop off in their hormone production. So what a lot of people are using is drug forms of hormones. And as always, when you extract a drug and you give it to somebody, you create more imbalance. The drug is found usually in nature, but it's found with a suite of other substances that support its metabolism and keep our bodies healthy. So one of the medicines on our landscape that can be incredibly useful for this is the pollen from pine trees, because it helps to increase those anabolic hormones in the male body and helps to keep a male whose hormones have naturally started to drop up.
Thanks, Daniel. When you click on Surthrival through our website, One Radio Network, you'll see a couple of choices. The 4 P's has some different herbs and a little more kicking your giddy up, and then the regular gold pine pollen is there for you on any Surthrival link on OneRadioNetwork.com. Pretty jazzed. I'm on the auto ship now with pine pollen. It's kind of like one of my favorite things ever. Just took a shot about half an hour ago. I have it up here in the studio. And if you do it once a month, I'm figuring out you can almost do like 2 dropperfuls. Well, the dropper only goes about halfway, and boy, hold it under your tongue, guys and girls. And I believe Nancy, she said that she's taking it. A lot of girls like to get a little bit of T levels once they get more you know, 40, 50, 60 revs around the sun. Sometimes the T levels drop a little bit, and the pine pollen's a great superfood to do that, or you're not going to doc and having them pump you up with some kind of testosterone that goodness knows where they got it. You don't even want to ask them where, you know, where they got it. Kind of like my grandma used to say, don't touch your Uncle Tony. You don't know where he's been. So kind of like that. You just don't know. You got to know the source. So anyway, that's the Sirthrival. And then, of course, that's where colostrum is. If you like to get some colostrum, it's great. We have some terrific products in our store. Sharon's done a great job of categorizing them all and putting them up there. And virtually everything in there is we've used or did use. And I don't think there's hardly anything in there that I haven't touched at one point or another along the... And we built it up over the years. And we always will change out, too, when we find something is better. For example, we had a charcoal in there that... it started to become popular 3, 4, 5 months ago. Folks like David Wolf start talking about it. And I think Dr. Jennifer Daniels mentioned, you know, charcoal could be good to take. It's a pretty amazing detoxifier. And so we mentioned it. And then Meridian Grace, you know, Meridian, she's always on top of things. And she said, well, you got to get this C60. That's the best ever. And then there was a fellow from Europe who said the same thing. He said, yeah, you don't want to do, this is what he said, you know, who knows, he just probably made it up too, but that charcoal detoxified, what do they call it? What's the word? Yeah, I guess just regular detoxified charcoal. But wasn't there another word? Anyway, charcoal is not the best for everyday use, but C60 is. So we immediately found a C60 and replaced the one that we had. So that's another advantage of the store. If we find something better, stronger, faster, less expensive, and even more visibility with the source of the product, we'll change out, a particular item. So that's the advantage of shopping in our store. And also, anytime you purchased anything on Amazon, whether it be a movie or anything, a new car or $200 version of Yes, No, Maybe, Chronobiotic Nutrition. If you shop through Amazon, we'll get a little a commission on the sale. And we got a great link up there at the top of the page, Shop, Connect, Enjoy, all of Earth's biggest selection. And by shopping through Amazon on that link that you can bookmark and just have it right there handy anytime you shop, you'll have all your personal information saved. It just knows where you've been, the geeky thing is. It knows that you've connected through One Radio Network once you bookmark it. So every time you shop at Amazon, if you do it right now while you're thinking about it, it helps us just by every time you shop at Amazon, it helps support One Radio Network. Isn't that cool? I think so.
From the Hill Country in Texas, this is OneRadioNetwork.com.
Used to eat roses, thought that they'd make her beautiful, and they did. Once poses Douglas Fairbanks, he was so handsome, he wore a mustache, must have had much cash too. Worth the king's ransom, Charlie Chaplin, he was invited when these artists became united. These artists became united.
Good morning. This is OneRadioNetwork.com. The telephone number is 888-663-6386. Email patrick@OneRadioNetwork.com.
It's one of our faves, Katie. I love that line. But Douglas Fairbanks had a mustache. Must have had much cash, too. That's great. Let's see. I always give you some of my favorite movies. So if you do the Netflix thing or something, something that I've seen recently. Have you guys seen La La Land? What's that?
Haven't seen it.
Oh, man. It's really good. Really good. Really, really good. La La Land. That's a great one. Sully, I saw that. That's a good movie. And I just saw one the other night, The Light Between Oceans.
Mm.
Ooh, boy.
Haven't even heard of that.
Oh, yeah. It's really, really well done. The Light Between Oceans. It's really a fun movie to see. So those are three if you'd like to try them. Sully, La La Land is well worth it. And The Light Between Oceans, some of my faves I've seen lately. I do a movie every night, whether I need it or not, Adam, you know, just to keep up to date. You know what I mean?
I'm catching up. The only one I'm watching now is Poodle Springs with James Caan.
Poodle Springs. Never heard.
A Philip Marlowe mystery.
Is it good?
Pretty good so far.
Yeah.
I'm halfway through.
Poodle Springs, yeah. Adam and I, we're good. And Vibrant, yeah, we like to watch movies. Good morning. Who's this?
This is Denise calling from Dallas.
Well, Miss Denise, nice to hear from you. It's been a while. How are you feeling?
I'm fine. I've been in the hospital. I'm not in the hospital, but I've had some surgeries. But this is my question.
Yes.
I sent it in email, but I was off, couldn't listen to the program for about 5 minutes, about neurogenic bladder, which is incomplete emptying of the bladder.
Oh.
Have y'all answered that yet?
No, we didn't. I just see your email now. But Adam could probably give you
okay.
some ideas on that. So what's happening?
Yeah,
so like when you pee, well, it just doesn't, you don't get rid of it all kind of thing?
Don't get rid of that. Yeah, that's probably the worst thing with MS. And I'm trying to research that now here. As I was listening to Adam talk about traumas,
mm-hmm.
It occurred to me, my goodness, I know I had a physical trauma associated with my bladder when I was about 5 years old or something.
Really?
They took me to, because I was having to go to the bathroom all the time,
mm-hmm.
so they took me to the doctor, I guess a urologist, and he stretched the neck of my bladder, and man, it really, really hurt. So I thought, wow, I wonder if that has anything to do with this problem I'm having now.
Oh, I bet so. I mean, it would just make sense, wouldn't it, Anna Bergstrom?
Definitely could. When you think of the bladder problem, what's the first color that comes to your mind?
Oh, God. Yellow. Well, that
could
makes
be a
sense, doesn't it?
That's a good, go ahead.
Could be a decision trauma.
Uh-huh.
A choice trauma. And by the way, the bladder has a lot to do with, yellow is also the color of learning and education.
Mm-hmm.
So the bladder is actually a reflex to the brain. We do a lot of our thinking with our brain, and if you look at the brain, the head is a big bladder, the ears are the kidneys,
huh.
the Eustachian tubes are the ureters, and the esophagus is the urethra. It's all there. So you can actually work on your bladder by working points on your head, both for two bladders. The urinary bladder meridian goes all over the skull, as does the gallbladder meridian. So two bladders are all over there. So actually by working on the skull, reflexing it, tapping with the fingers, for instance, can automatically increase your brain power and free up the bladder, too.
Wow.
And other things, you can work points. If you look at, now with the internet, you can find the bladder meridian. So look at various points and experiment with working all of those. You know, having an injury like in the shin and places like that can affect the meridians. And I collected at one time a list of the death touch points because, as Swami Nitty Gritty said, you have to know how to kill a person before you know how to heal them. So all of the points that you can bump are death touch points. Now, an expert in death touch from the Orient, they go and hit a point to kill a person. But many times people activate these death touch points by hitting their finger with a hammer, bumping their shin against the coffee table, any amount of injuries, hurting themselves in the steering wheel of a car when they have an accident. All of these things activate death touch points. Some of them, it takes 24 hours. Some of them take 3 days. Some of them take a week. Some of them take an entire month. Some take a year, and some take a decade to kick in. So it's good to note all your accidents, find out what points you've activated, and then work them. One thing to release the bladder, of course, is massage all those bladder-type points, including the shins. The shins are tied into the bladder, and you can often release the bladder. And the other thing is to practice exercising the bladder by doing Kegels and reverse Kegels and leaning over and practice squeezing the urine out of the bladder. Because people get lazy bladders, the colon falls down on the bladder and squeezes it. It holds less fluid, and they have to urinate more. And ultimately, sometimes the tubes fill up, and so you can actually do exercises. Like if a bicep gets muscle, it gets weak, you can exercise it. The same with the bladder. There are muscles around the bladder that you can get conscious control of.
Denise, you know how to do Kegels? Were you kind of squeezing like you're going to stop your urination? You know that?
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
Okay. Well, what Anna's saying, you could practice that. And I think it's good to hold it for about 10 seconds or so when you do these. That seems to be the length of time where the muscles kind of get stronger. And you could do those, and that might strengthen things up around that area.
Both the stopping and actually the forcing
out.
Both. They call those reverse Kegels, by the way.
So do you breathe out making like you're forcing out, Adam? You breathe out, I guess, huh?
That's another good point, that you can do rapid breathing and actually sometimes free it out, because the lungs are a direct relationship with the bladder, just like a swim bladder in a fish. Hmm. That became our lungs. Hmm. So our lungs are a bladder, and if you look at the timing chart for the day, the midnight noon law, you'll find out that bladder time is 3 to 5 in the afternoon, and lung time is 3 to 5 in the morning. They have a relationship with each other. By eating a watermelon, which is very good for your bladder between 3 and 5, it frees up both the urinary bladder and the lung.
So Denise, bladder time for you in Texas would be about 4 to 5 because we're on daylight savings. And Adam, what would be some good foods that Denise could maybe try to eat between 4 to 5 in the afternoon to help her bladder heal?
All-time best is in the melon family.
Melons.
Anything in the melon family. And they have a rule about that, you know, eat them alone or leave them alone.
Yeah.
And there's a reason for that. So you just don't eat anything an hour before and an hour after at least, and then just take bladder during bladder time. Somewhere about 4 o'clock would be good. You can experiment with 3 o'clock in the afternoon, and you can experiment with 4:30 too to see if you can target the exact point.
Denise, some months ago, three or four or five months ago, I started to, I could really became aware of my bladder being sore, you know, when I went right above the cervix there and you press in there where the bladder is. Do you know where that is?
Uh-huh.
Can you press in there and is it sore?
Yeah.
Yeah. And then I was also peeing too much at night. So I started to focus on it, and I actually started putting that red light on it, the chicken lamp thing we talk about. And I did it quite a while, almost every day for a month. And I began to tap on it, you know, like that. I started to tap on it like a little gentle kind of qigong kind of tap. And I tell you, within a couple of months, it's totally no, I can press in there. I don't feel any kind of discomfort. It's really, I did it all with just doing that, you know. And I don't know what was going on with it, but it wasn't happy, you know. You know what I mean? You could tell. It just wasn't totally 100% happy. There was nothing terrible. Adam said massaging or even tapping that area, Adam, I guess it would just bring more energy to it, wouldn't it?
That's right. And certain muscles. You can actually help your bladder by doing toe raises.
Huh, toe raises.
And as strange as it sounds,
tell her how to do that. Tell her how to do that.
Well, you just lift your toes towards you and then push them down like you're clenching them, and then raise them up, and that actually frees up muscles tied in with the bladder, which are called the peroneus muscles. They're in the along the shins and the side. You have a rear and a front one, and those muscles actually tie into it. Also, spinal twists actually will free up the bladder, because the sacrospinalis muscles are tied in directly with the bladder too, as are the tibial muscles, and those are definitely right in the front. The bladder meridian itself runs right by the tibials.
Are there certain toes that are bladder toes?
You bet. The bladder toe is the pinky toe.
The pinky toe.
And many people on the way to the bathroom will bump that pinky toe, and then they'll have a problem with their bladder and not realize it came from just bumping that little kidney toe, pinky toe. The kidney toe is the middle toe.
Yeah. So, Denise, you can rub your little pinky toe on both sides anytime you want. That'll help your bladder, too.
The urinary system tends to be...
Yeah, well, I hope those are some ideas for you. That'll get you going. I mean, whatever.
Thank you.
All right, sweetie. Thank you. Bye. God, I love her. She's a trooper, right, and Denise?
She is.
Got MS.
It's always wonderful to hear her always, on Fridays and other times.
She calls in. Let's see. Did we didn't even do a station break. I guess we got to do one of those. And